We're called to order the House Revenue Committee meeting and welcome everybody here today. What we are going to do, we have three bills on the calendar, 2184, 2503, and 2704. All of them relate to inheritance tax. And I think that the discussion of each of those bills individually will be enhanced if we kind of have a chance to talk about all of them at the same time. So what I'm going to do in a moment is open a public hearing on all three, and then we'll ask Lisbeth to give us the staff overview, and then we'll take the maybe bring up Deborah and give us the overview on 2184. That's the department bill? Yeah. And then see if we have any other exposition testimony on 2503 or 2704. But then once we get the overview of the three bills done, then whoever comes up to testify can talk about any one or two or three of them all together. So I think that'll facilitate the discussion this morning. So if everyone is satisfied with that, let me open a public hearing on House Bill 2184, House Bill 2503, and House Bill 2704. And then, committee, I've got a meeting in the Speaker's office at 9 o'clock, so I apologize for taking my leave a few minutes before that. I'll leave it in Representative Verger's able hands this morning, since Representative Scott covered the formula. With that, Lisbeth, would you please?
Chairman Shetterly and committee members, for the record, I'm Lisbeth Martin-Mahar with the Legislative Revenue Office. I wanted to start just real briefly to make sure we're all clear on what current law is and then the recent changes in the federal estate tax law. So I gave you a couple handouts, and the first one here is just the one with the yellow boxes and the blue boxes. And so just to kind of recap some of the discussion that was going on last week at our hearing on Friday, basically with current law, what we have is a connection now, according to Attorney General's opinion, of the pre-1997 federal estate tax law. So basically what that is doing is it's meaning that we have a federal exemption limit then that is fixed at $600,000. Now, so everyone's clear, this exemption limit is based on the gross value of the estate. So this is something that in the recent tax changes at the federal level, this $600,000 has grown. So in 1997, we had the Taxpayer Relief Act, and this federal exemption limit then was increased from $600,000, and it went up in 1998 to $625,000, in 1999, $650,000, and in 2001, it was $675,000. And then it goes on up until finally by 2006 you hit the 1 million threshold. And again, this is basically telling taxpayers who needs to file an estate tax at the federal level. And this in the case right now, if we were under 1997 law changes, it would be $675,000 as far as the gross value of the estate. Now what we've seen in 2001, there were additional federal law changes, and up to these 2001 federal law changes, Department of Revenue, as they testified, thought that we were already connected with the 97 law changes in those, because all it was increasing that threshold amount. So then in 2001, we had a larger tax reform than at the federal level in the Economic Growth and Tax Relief Reconciliation Act. Then in that federal law change, we had then the beginning of this phase out of the total state death tax. So basically, as was discussed before, in Oregon, we now have a pickup tax, which is the total state death tax that is allowed at the federal level. So when the federal government is now phasing out the total state death tax, then that means that our revenues that are collected from the estate tax will go down. And this is phased out, as you can see, 25% each year between 2002, it began last year, for deaths occurring in 2002 to 2005. And so after 2005, the state death tax credit at the federal level goes away if you connect with the 2001 federal law changes. Now, the other component that was also a part of these changes in 2001 was an additional increase then in the federal exemption limit. So as we saw under 1997 law in the yellow box, we hit 1 million threshold in 2006. We increased then in the 2001 changes to hit 1 million in 2002. And in 2003, we're at 1 million under the 2001 federal law changes too. it goes up 2004 to 1.5 million. And so basically by 2005, when we have the 100% reduction in the total state death tax limit, then we would be at 1.5 million as far as the threshold amount. And the final component there of the 2001 federal law changes was just then a decrease in the highest estate tax rates. So that's meaning that the federal overall tax liability goes down slightly between 2002 and 2009. And again, as we talked about before, in 2010, then it comes back again. So this is just kind of a recap, and it's important to keep clear in your mind which law some states have decided to connect to, because some have decided to connect to 97 law changes, some have decided to connect to 2001 changes, some have then just not allowed this phase out of the total state death tax, and then have, you know, added back in the amount that was reduced in the subsequent years. So then this summary here just shows you NCSL's a survey that was done recently in 2002, and this has got the green box and the purple box there for you. But just to kind of give you, again, a summary, just a snapshot of what states have done since the 2001 changes on estate tax at the federal level, what you can see is there are 33 states that are still connected with the federal law changes that occurred in 2001, and they will have then their state death tax eliminated by 2005. Now, some of them are also down here in the purple box, which basically shows the states with their own inheritance tax or estate tax. So some of them have chosen to just move to that level. And then those all in the green box here are really the states that then have started to decouple from some of these 2001 federal law changes. And you've got 16 states that are basically in that category, in which Oregon falls into, because, again, we're connected with the pre-1997 federal estate tax law. So I just tried to give you there at least an understanding of what kind of level and what federal law these different states were trying to connect to, whether it was 2001 or it was prior to the 2001 changes. And when I'm saying that their tax is equal to, like, the federal credit as of 12/31/2000, that's meaning that they're basically then connected with the 97 law changes, and they're going to just keep their federal tax, state death tax credit at that level that it was in, like, 2000. So, and as far as one last major point that I think it's important to keep in mind when we're hearing all three of these bills today, is just we've got a couple components that need to be in whatever vehicle that you decide to use as the changes in the estate tax area. And the first one is just to make sure that we have a statement for the Department of Revenue on the tax treatment of Oregon estates with deaths between 1997 and 2001. And then we need to be looking at also what is the tax treatment of Oregon estates in 2002, and because that, as we can see here, in 2002 was the first year, if we connect to the 2001 law changes, in 2002 was the first year you had that 25% reduction then in the total state death tax. So we need to make sure that it's clear what is the policy in 2002 and future years. So, and in encompassing that, we need to be considering first what is Oregon's estate value filing threshold for the estate tax. Do we want to have a difference between the federal law level and Oregon's level? Because if you connect with 97 law changes, that filing threshold would now be different in the sense that in 2002 it's 700,000 under the 97 law changes, but we're at 1 million under the 2001 law changes. So do you want to have a difference between the filing threshold in Oregon versus what is happening at the federal level? And then what is the method that you would like to have as far as imposing that estate tax in the future, if you want to have the state tax in the future beyond 2005 when it's phased out with the total state death tax? Okay, so then with just a brief summary of the bills, with House Bill 2184, with the Department of Revenue's bill, this is really premised on the idea of current law, and so it's clarifying the date on which these Oregon estate tax law is connected to the Internal Revenue Code as it is in effect on December 31st, 2000, for decedents die in honor after January 1st, 1998 and before January 1st, 2003. So the important point here is that the Department of Revenue has clarified that whatever was the policy for the stepped up increases in 1997 would be in effect, as well as in 2001, those changes that would have gone into effect prior to 2000. So the issue, though, is in the future, it's specifying that Oregon estate law is connected to the Internal Revenue Code for decedents dying on or after January 1st, 2003, that has been the Internal Revenue Code in effect on December 31st, 1996. So then we go back to the $600,000 filing threshold for 2003 and beyond. Okay, now, again, this is not real clear, though, and this is, I'm sure, what Deborah will bring up in her testimony, is that there needs to be additional language in this bill to really capture everything that the Department of Revenue would need with those changes that took place with the 2001 federal law changes and 1997 federal law changes. If we want to have a filing threshold at $600,000 like it's established in 1996, then that can be one policy change, but then we also need to be capturing some of those administrative changes and other changes that occurred in those 2001 and 1997 law changes. So this doesn't do a real good job in the future of really explaining, giving a good roadmap for the Department of Revenue on how to implement this program. So that's, and with 2184 right now, I'm assuming that this is current law, but it's not real clear in the future how exactly we would be making this adjustment back to the 1996 law. So I didn't do a revenue impact on it, but I'm assuming that it's like a no revenue impact. And as far as there could be potentially a fiscal to this particular bill if it's not revised. So with House Bill 2704, this is the bill that's very similar to the one that we had during fifth special session, for those who were around and stuff. This was the bill that was very similar bill was vetoed by the governor. So with House Bill 2704, what this is doing is it clarifies the date on which Oregon estate tax is connected to the Internal Revenue Code as in effect on December 31st, 2000, for those decedents dying on or after January 1988 and before January 1st, 2002. And then it is establishing just a maximum exemption amount for estates that is whatever is allowed under the Internal Revenue Code or $1.5 million. So basically it's capping the exemption threshold at $1.5 million. It's establishing then a different date on which the Oregon estate tax law is connected to the Internal Revenue Code for decedents dying on or after January 1st, 2002, as being the Internal Revenue Code in effect on December 31st, 2002. So then you're capturing those changes that were made in the 2001 law change. But it is, what it's doing is disconnecting then from the phase out of the state death tax under federal law for 4 years. So that phase out of the state death tax would not be captured. You'd be adding back a portion in order to keep the state death tax at its existing level. And this would go on from January 1st, 2002 and before January 1st of 2005. To be consistent with then the 2001 federal law changes. But then it's going to eliminate the estate tax in Oregon for deaths occurring on or after January 1st, 2005. So that's the important thing to remember. It will be consistent with the federal law changes in eliminating the state death tax credit and the estate tax in Oregon beginning in January 1st, 2005. And it just clarifies that the applicable dates and other administrative rules will be connected to those contained in the Economic Growth and Tax Relief Reconciliation Act of 2001. Now, the revenue impact on this is $22 million reduction in 2003-05, $55 million in 2005-07, and $88.5 million in 2007-09. And these revenue impacts are based on the assumption that our Oregon current estate tax law is connected to pre-1997 federal law changes pertaining to estate taxes and had that $600,000 threshold. And then finally, with House Bill 2503, what this bill is doing is it repeals basically the Oregon's federal estate pickup tax for estates of decedents who died on or after January 1st, 2004. So basically this eliminates the estate tax 1 year earlier than House Bill 2704, but 2503 really doesn't address prior years. It doesn't deal at all with the things I was talking about to begin with deaths that occurred between 1997 and 2004, basically, because it just talks about what's going to happen after 2004. So this bill would really need additional work in clarifying what was to be current, making sure that it was clear and the direction was given to the Department of Revenue on what's the current law between now and 2004. Mm-hmm. And the revenue impact that I put on this bill, it really, again, it's unclear what the current law is, but mm-hmm. if you assume that the proponents of the bill were perfectly fine with the current law being at $600,000 threshold, then this act of just eliminating the estate tax beginning in 2004 would decrease general fund revenues by $42 million in 2003-05 biennium, $86 million in 2005-07 biennium, and $88.5 million in 2007-09 biennium.
Okay. Thank you. I want to get Representative Butler and Representative Miller up here to the table. While they're coming, let me just add a couple of issues to flag to deal with this as we go forward, Elizabeth. And one would be the federal changes in the capital gains step-up in basis. So we can address that situation, and if we can't avoid a situation where you have a different state basis than you will a different federal basis. And then also what happens on January 1, 2011, under current federal law anyway, when the estate tax is reimposed, do we go back to just a pickup tax and address that, I guess, in whatever vehicle we choose to move forward as well, so that we've got that issue. All right. With that, let me welcome Representative Miller and Representative Butler to our fair committee this morning.
Do you want me to...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. For the record, State Representative Randy Miller, District 37. I appreciate this chance to be before this committee. Having chaired the Revenue Committee on the Senate side, I understand that the complexity of some of the bills you've got to deal with, and I appreciate your mission here. What I'd like to do is simply speak to the philosophy of House Bill 2503 and some of the accompanying bills you have before you, and that is that I've come to fully endorse the policy of getting rid of what is one of the most objectionable taxes I can imagine, and that is the tax on someone's estate at their death. Understand that the money in the estate or the property in the estate has been taxed all of that person's life. This is the ultimate double taxation. It is the ultimate insult that I think the decedent, if they were still living, could experience, but particularly the family members, those who are impacted by the tax on the estate, which impacts in many cases a family business, a family farm. We aren't just talking about, and you use the word estate or inheritance, it brings to mind, you know, grand palaces and extraordinary wealth, but that isn't the case in many situations. In many situations I know of, frankly, down on the coast in lumber businesses that are owned by families, that when the tax man comes, the decision is you either pay the tax or you close the business. Or you pay the tax and you close the business. And that is not a pleasant experience. And again, my fundamental here is, why must we continue to tax money that has been taxed throughout an individual's lifetime? I heard the revenue impact statement, and I'm learning a lot about those in my current role. And I understand if it was indeed, as Elizabeth suggests, $42 million in the next biennium, that would be problematic to some degree. But, you know, I've heard discussions in this building, for instance, about opposition to increasing the opportunity for Oregonians to gamble. and it would bring in money to the state. But we, many people are reluctant to do that because we don't want to get money in that particular fashion. Well, I would suggest to you that this is equally objectionable. That again, this is money that has been taxed, property that has been taxed, and the greedy state and the greedy federal government have just been in such a state of greed that they particularly don't care, I guess, about the fairness of taxing someone's livelihood at their death. So, again, my point here, Mr. Chairman and members, is just the philosophy that I believe it's wrong to continue to tax this property at death.
All right. Thank you, Representative Butler. If you want to stick around for questions from the committee, I know you've got a meeting.
Yeah,
too.
We do.
Well, let me just ask, are there any questions or comments for Representative Miller since he's gone?
I think Representative Butler's at that meeting as well.
So. Oh, is that right? Okay, well, let's go. Let's hear you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Let me just put a human face. I'm Tom Butler, House District 60, but I've appreciated the explanation that Elizabeth has provided to us today and appreciate the Chair's questions relative to the step-up in basis and whatever you do addressing the issues after 2010. My concern today has been echoed substantially by the drafter, the author of this bill, and I co-signed on the bill because it is a high priority for myself as well. I remember back when preparing a 706, a U.S. death tax return, was pleasant and fun to do, and wrapping up an estate was something that was not terribly complex once you finished up with the 706 and did that kind of activity. Change hats here. I just have completed my responsibility taking care of the responsibilities as a trustee of a trust following the passing of a family member. And the concern that we had when we finished up the 706 and then all of a sudden began to be concerned about the issues relative to the multi-state tax returns, of which only Oregon were we looking at any concern about, and eventually having to divide up a family business in order to disclaim $400,000 worth of assets on the federal tax return so that Oregon would be basically tax exempt rather than pay approximately $40,000 in Oregon death tax as a result of the failure to not disclaim that $400,000 asset. The concern that I have is that what it's done is it's bifurcated a family business and has severely, between the estates of the two decedents, here has caused some great consternation and now is going to leave to another generation the problems of trying to go back and put the family business back together again as a result of the fact that there had to be a disclaimer in order to meet the obligations for the state of Oregon because, frankly, they didn't have $40,000 that they were willing to expend for Oregon income taxes because most of the, 100% of all the assets that were involved here were real estate assets, and they weren't high income producing assets. They were, as Representative Miller has indicated, they could be in such things as timber or other developable land that hadn't reached its highest and full potential. So I do have a concern about what it does to a family business. I have a concern as to what we found out afterwards when we'd made the disclaimer that the Department of Revenue doesn't have a team of folks that are out there beating the brush to find out those folks presently as to how they are, how they have filed their returns in relationship to the $1 million exemption versus the $600,000 at present for Oregon. So I'm concerned about what it does with regard to equality. And that needs to be addressed by the committee before you're done with the day, that the equity amongst those folks who have passed away before something gets done, or if nothing is done, then we've got to go back to 1996, 97, and start to recapture those estates, and we've got to go and start pulling folks out of the backwoods to figure out how much they now owe us as a result of the fact that we have gone along tacitly with a modification of law without any real modification having been made. With that, you've heard the comments of the twice taxed, and I am concerned about that. I'm concerned about what eventually we would do with regard to the step-up in basis and on what this will look like in the long term for the state of Oregon. And finally, because this involved the estate upon which I had worked involved multiple states here in the Northwest, the concern I have is that Oregon stands uniquely in its inability to make up its mind as to where it needs to be with regard to the other states, thus making a very complex situation. And by not doing anything, what you've got is the full Accountants and Attorneys Act with regard to not doing it, not taking any action. I would encourage that action. Thank you very much.
Questions? Representative Butler, I just have one. I assume I saw you shaking your head when we were talking about the connecting somehow to the step-up in basis. I assume that it's going to be a lot easier for you and your clients and folks who receive inherited capital assets to connect with whatever changes the federal law makes in relative to that step up in basis. I mean, it's complicated, but it seems to me only more complicated if we have a different state basis than we have a federal basis in capital assets.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair, and it's not just when they get ready to sell the assets,
right.
It's when they begin to depreciate them anew, sure. And creating multiple depreciation schedules. And we've worked years and years and years trying to bring our depreciation schedules back into uniformity between the state and federal. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, please, whatever we do, let's connect in some fashion that gives us uniform laws relative to the estate and uniform laws relative to the assets that are distributed to the heirs.
All right. Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, I'll take my leave. Pretty much the same crowd.
All right.
Thank you. Oh, and I just asked not to move any of these out today.
My goodness, that's not much fun. All right, well, let's see. Next we'll call Jeff Chune. Is that
Jeff Chain?
Members of the committee, good morning. My name is Jeff Sheen, or Jeffrey Sheen. I was invited to come down here by Ron Bailey, who was here last Friday, and I have prepared for you and presented, I think it's in your materials, a draft copy of an article that's going to appear in the April edition of the Oregon State Bar, the State Administration newsletter. By way of background, I'm a tax and estate planning attorney from Beaverton, Oregon. I was born in Klamath Falls, and so I'm kind of a little bit familiar with the rural-urban rift between going on here in the state. And when I signed up for this, I guess in a sense both am speaking a little bit in opposition and in support of some of the different measures here. As a tax attorney, one of my goals, or what clients come to me for, is a means to reduce their tax liabilities or do the planning necessary to try and maximize the reduction of their liabilities. Probably the best bill before you that it would make my clients the most happy is 2503, which ends up on a repeal in January of 2004. However, I'm also mindful that you're looking at some very significant revenue problems in this state, and while the inheritance tax is a very small part of that revenue chunk that you're looking for, you're really not in a position to give up much revenue at all, and therefore need to look to what kind of a system you want to put in place to continue the revenue stream. Before I go into too much more detail, there's a couple of principles that were true up until 2002 for those of us who give advice to clients. One general principle was that if there was no federal tax due, there was no state inheritance tax due. And up until 2002, that was perfectly accurate advice that both CPAs and attorneys and financial planners gave to their clients. Also, another issue which is not addressed by any of the bills is if you do decide to go forward with some kind of a a tax system, you need to consider whether or not there is to be a tax due when the first spouse passes away. None of these bills address that issue. It used to be, again, one of the principles that when the first spouse passed away, in the case of a married couple, there was no federal tax due and there was no state tax due. Now that we've disconnected, as of 2002, if a married couple utilizes a fairly common estate planning technique to create a credit shelter, or sometimes called a B trust, family trust, to put the amount equal to the federal exemption aside, because that's tax-free, that current exemption is $1 million. So when the surviving spouse says, okay, we'll put $1 million into the credit shelter trust, they're now looking at writing the state of Oregon a check for $33,200. And as a result, this is a kind of a windfall that the state is now sort of seeing in terms of you're collecting a tax which up until 2002 was not there when the first spouse passed away. Now, what I'd also like to split is that, you know, you kind of really got two different time frames to deal with here. You've got the period of 1998 through 2001. And in many respects, bills 2184 and 2704 pretty much address those issues in a very similar sort of way. 2002 tax year, 2184 addresses those issues a little differently than 2704. In 2002, if you follow the provisions of 2704, at least as I understand them, there would be no tax due until you hit the $1 million threshold. On the other hand, 2184 is if you are required to file a federal return, in other words, you have an estate over $1 million, the Oregon tax starts at the $600,000 level. For that reason, I sort of have a slight preference for 2704 in that arena. In the year 2003, none of the bills, well, I take that back. 2184 presents a solution which is not really a solution, and that is to go back to existing law of $600,000. But there's no provisions in that bill to provide any means of how that is to be enforced. And I think Deborah Buchanan is going to address that issue, so I won't go into it in too much detail. And then you have to address the issue beyond 2003, whether or not you're going to go with a standalone tax system or try and continue to work with the federal system. One of the problems with decoupling, of course, is that you've got new tax forms. So if you follow 2184 with a 2003 tax year, it will require a new state of Oregon tax form, probably somewhat similar to what the state of Washington has had to do for their estates between $700,000 and $1 million, because there's no federal return required. And also, Representative Butler addressed the issue of how do you ensure compliance for someone who is not required to file a federal estate tax return. You have nothing at this point to gather data to go after those who don't comply. A couple of the provisions that I like in 2184 that I think address a couple of kind of procedural issues is one of the sections, I believe it's section 9 of that bill, does provide for a statute of limitations in the inheritance tax arena. When I was doing some preliminary work for the draft article before you, I tried to figure out what the statute was for Oregon inheritance tax, and found out there was none. And 2184 corrects that issue. Also, it's interesting to note that Oregon revised statute 118.160, which is the statute that says if you have to file a federal return, then you have to file a state return. As that statute presently sits, there is no provision in that statute that says if you're not required to file a federal return, you do not owe any Oregon tax. That's been the policy of the department, but 2184 fixes that provision. And lastly, I would like you to consider that in order to avoid the problem or what happened in the fifth legislative session with House Bill 4077 would be to consider putting the remedial provisions in one House bill. In other words, for what has happened between 1998 and 2002 or 2003, put those remedial provisions into one bill, because they're kind of pretty much revenue neutral. And that would give us, then, if that bill passes, that cleans up to the present time. And then in another bill for the future, for 2003 and beyond, which does address the revenue issues, put that in a separate bill so that if we can avoid the problem that happened when Governor Kitzhaber vetoed the last bill, is there were some good fixes in that bill that disappeared because of the veto. And the bill was vetoed largely because of revenue concerns. So that pretty much concludes my remarks, and I am certainly will stay and be available for questions.
Thank you very much. That was very informative. Are there any questions? Representative Hess.
Mr. Shane, I appreciate you coming very much. That was helpful. Are you giving your stamp of approval then to House Bill 2184?
Not completely. I think the House Bill 20, the concern I have about 2184 is the section that applies to 2002 and 2003. 2002 still leaves a situation of a married couple. In fact, I have a return right now that a lady is going to have to pay a $25,000 tax just because of funding the credit shelter trust, whereas it would be nice in future legislation for there to be the equivalent of a marital deduction so that when the first spouse dies, that tax can be deferred until the second spouse passes away, and that's a pretty common structure within the federal law. The other aspect of 2184 that is completely unworkable is 2003 and beyond, and I think Deborah is going to address that with you in pretty great detail. I, in some ways, sort of favor overall kind of the design of 2704. I realize there's some revenue losses there, but there's some simplicity issues that kind of tend to give you the ability to stay with the federal tax system following the exemptions as they increase. And conceivably, you could probably push this out to 2008 or 2009 following the federal exemption increases, which is going to result in a reduction in revenue, but continue to collect 100% of the state death tax credit even after 2005. Depending on where you tie into, you could keep the state death tax credit as the revenue for the state. But as far as administration and compliance go, you could continue to follow the federal filing requirement, which would make it a tax that it stays on par with the way it's administered now. Thank you.
Other questions? All right. Thank you very much. All right. We have Don Schellenberg, Tom Riley, and Don Strzowski.
Good morning, Vice Chair Merger, members of the committee. I'm Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. With me today is Tom Brawley. Tom is on our Oregon Farm Bureau State Board, and Don Strzowski. And Don Strzowski is on our Tax Advisory Committee. Tom is actually the board representative on our advisory committee. The advisory committee we have, their responsibility is to interpret our policies on tax issues, and each of you have received one of our policy books. hope you haven't lost it yet. I can get you another one if you did. Or maybe you took it home and put it beside your bed so you could read it in the evening. Their responsibility is to interpret that policy and make suggestions also for new policies. We're here today in support of passage of the principles involved in House Bill 2503 and 2704 in particular. And namely, that principle is elimination of the inheritance tax. The legislature in the fifth special session under Chair Shetterly's able leadership removed the inheritance tax, or at least began to phase it out. Unfortunately, as was mentioned, that was vetoed. And now you, the 2003 legislative body, have the ability to correct that mistake. Family farms, farms in Oregon are primarily, almost exclusively, family-owned. Whether they're incorporated or not, they're all family farms. Very, very few that wouldn't meet that qualification. And the elimination of the death tax is really a critical issue to maintaining the family farm in Oregon. A farmer or rancher's only assets are always tied up in the capital investment that they have in the equipment and the land itself. And what's really hard is when you have to liquidate a portion of that asset in order to pay the tax. It just makes the operation uneconomical if you have to do that, or instead of doing that, you have to borrow a large sum of money. Then your overhead is unbearable when you try to make ends meet. There's no tax that is more cruel, no tax that violates the basic principle of taxation more than the death tax. There's a relationship between property taxes and the property services that you receive. There's a relationship between my ability to pay income tax and the health of society that allows me to achieve the level of prosperity that I have. However, there's no relationship between the amount of death tax the survivors have to pay and any kind of service received. Whatever debt there was to society, if there was one, has already been paid in the income tax. In addition to the violation of tax principles, the fear of death taxes also harms the farm or ranch operations before death occurs. Families can spend thousands of dollars to try to protect their businesses by purchasing life insurance and paying large sums to write estate plans. However, the money that it takes for these activities would be far better spent improving the businesses of those people or, in fact, reducing existing debt that they likely have already. So, in our opinion, now is the time to correct this tax inequity. Now is the time to ensure that family farms in Oregon will be able to continue to pass from one generation to the next, and without hardship and without destroying the business itself. So Oregon Farm Bureau asks that the House Revenue Committee send a bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation that would eliminate the death tax at the earliest date convenient, listening to the discussion by experts, tax experts. There are a lot of different considerations that you have to take into account, and we trust that you can do that job, and we'd want to support you on that. One other final comment I would make, Farm Bureau does support connecting to the federal statutes, the federal tax laws. From our perspective, what that does is it makes bookkeeping a whole lot easier. And if bookkeeping is easier, expenses are less. So to that extent, and for that reason, we would support connection to the federal tax laws. With that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Tom Brawley.
Good morning. First of all, it's very heartwarming to see the number of chairs that are filled up there, because when you make the effort to come to this to the House and testify, it's just heartwarming for me to see that my efforts are rewarded by having people listen to us. I am a full-time family farmer from Jefferson, Oregon. I have two sons that are full-time engaged in our farming enterprise. We a farm under two different names, and both our name, we farm two different enterprises, which constitute two different businesses. But don't be fooled by it. I'm not a wealthy man unless I sell. And we have no intention of selling. And so our intention is, and our will states, that we're going to pass this on to our heirs. And that's our full intent, unless we can't. And it'll be beyond my hands. Of course, I won't be here. But I'm trying to do the best I can to make sure that our family is able to continue the business that we, my wife and I, have started. It just occurs to me that larger businesses have ways of employing attorneys and setting up structures that they don't have to forfeit that part of their business that brings the income in. In farming, as a small business even, we are capital intensive as compared to perhaps even some other small businesses. It requires a lot of capital, and one of the best sayings I've heard that relates to this is that farmers live poor and die wealthy. And so that's some consolation to me. The trend in ag has been to get bigger. That's one of the few ways that we've found that we can survive. And so we purchase land, we get bigger combines, we incur debt. And this debt, if it isn't paid by the time I pass away, is going to be passed on as well. And so besides having to pay for that debt to continue farming, my sons are going to have to pay a death tax in addition to this. It seems also to me, I asked questions about what percent is this death tax. And as near as I can tell, it's 22% of whatever is deemed should be taxed. And so that is just heavy. That's just heavy, and I think uncalled for. It's extremely small to the state of Oregon. I'd like for you perhaps to know, but I don't. I think it's in the neighborhood of 1%, represents 1% or less of Oregon's income, and yet it's extremely large to the individual business owner, extremely. Yes, we do have a little insurance to cover it, but it's not going to cover it. We have some, and that, of course, we pay for continually, and so that's an outlay from us. As a public body, your duty to us as a taxpayer is to encourage investment in this state and to create an atmosphere that's going to foster business. And so even though you take a slight amount from the state in the form of revenue, which, by the way, I was really pleased to see this, the first speaker, who is the chair of that Ways and Means Committee, actually on our side of the fence. And so this can be converted to this atmosphere that I talked about that encourages business and keeps business, a very fundamental business in this state, working. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm Don Sersovsky. I am a grass seed and grain farmer in the Harrisburg and Junction City areas. My base of operations is Harrisburg. I'd like to thank you for allowing me to speak in favor of the elimination of this death tax. It is a grossly unfair tax, which is especially onerous to the family farm. In today's economy, families making a living solely from farming have assets in excess of any exemption the state or federal government has put out so far. Their current tax rates and exemptions now are temporary. In 2011, the federal government goes back to what it was in 1997, and I have no confidence that they will not return to that point. Now, recently I read a statement from one of our legislators who stated he had not been able to find evidence of a family farm being sold in order to pay death taxes. This happened just a few years ago, half a mile down the road from me. The farm in question was less than 10 years away from having a century farm designation, which meant
that same family had farmed that farm for over 90 years. At that particular time, there was no one in the family to continue farming the property. But the rents that they would generate from that farmland were not enough to pay the taxes, the death taxes. Therefore, they had no other option but to sell the property and pay the taxes. Now, this case may be indeed rare, but other cases are not. Those involving family farms who do have family members wishing to continue farm. In this case, a mortgage is usually taken out to cover those death taxes. In the beginning, all is fine. Then a period of low market hits, possibly as much as 10 years later, there have been cases of this. The burden of that mortgage still has to be paid off from those death taxes. It becomes too much, and the farm is lost. Time has passed, and no one realizes what really put the farm under. This death tax is not unfair not only because it causes many family farms to ultimately go under, but also taxes twice. All the capital that was raised to purchase that farm and to operate it all those years were subject to the income tax. The income tax does at least balance itself out according to income. When income is greater, the tax is higher, but easier to pay. When income is decreased, so is the tax burning, making it more palatable. I urge this committee to look very closely at the serious faults of the death tax and join me in realizing its very negative effects on agriculture in the state of Oregon. Thank you for your attention.
Well, I want to thank all three of you for being here, and I'd like to open it to questions. Any questions for any one of these? Don, Tom, John, any of them?
Madam Vice Chair, I'm curious about your example about the 90-year-old farm, and this may be a little bit off the death tax, but you said in that case there was no heir to continue farming that particular property. What happens in that kind of... It seems to me the next generation isn't as farm... It's a lot of work.
Right. In that case, the one family member who wanted, would have liked to have had the farm was living in the state of Washington and had a business up there that he could not eliminate at the time. When the family had died, in fact, my family had been renting the property for quite some time. In terms of the Century Farm designation, the requirement is that the family own and operate the farm, and that includes renting it to others so that it remains in a farming operation.
Okay. So it's rented.
Yes.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Barnhart.
Madam Chair, thank you. I've been puzzling about this issue for quite some time, ever since it came up in the last session and then again during special sessions. And I'm trying to figure out ways that we can get farmers what they need without at the same time giving up too much income. Because that's a big problem for us, as you know. I have no desire at all to disrupt the family ownership of farms or to force farmers to sell in ways that end up aggrandizing farms into large agribusiness that ends up being owned by people in New York and London. I think that would be a horrendous result if it were to come about as a result of taxes. I'm wondering if the Farm Bureau has considered any of the other alternatives to simply eliminating the inheritance tax. For example, raising the exempt amount to a larger level so that farms would come under that amount. Or, for example, either exempting farmland altogether from the inheritance tax, separate from other assets, or other kinds of alternatives other than simply eliminating the inheritance tax. One of the reasons I ask the question is because a substantial portion of wealth is held in other ways that it's perfectly divisible, that can easily be separated out for some to be used to pay taxes and some passed on to future generations without the kind of effects that you're describing on farms. And I recognize those effects. I wonder if you've considered those, any of those other alternatives, and what you think about them if you have.
And Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, we've talked about those. Farm Bureau believes that the inheritance tax issue is just not appropriate, that the basis for whatever the basis was to begin with to divide up property and distribute the redistribute the wealth, we think that's a totally improper reason for having the inheritance tax, and so we've considered other things. We have considered higher exemptions, but again, that was overridden by our belief that the inheritance tax, the principle of inheritance tax in the first place, is just not the right principle. And let's see, you'd mentioned one other one, and I'm sorry, I've forgotten what the third.
Well, one possibility is possible exemption of farmland from the valuation for inheritance tax purposes.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, Representative Barnhart, that would work for us, but it kind of puts us out on a limb out there where we're all by ourselves and we get chopped off sometime in the future. And so we just prefer to look at the whole picture and be included in the whole picture, believing again that the principle is flawed to begin with.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Farr?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Really just a comment. I agree with Representative Miller and anyone who actually states that this is just not the right kind of taxation. By eliminating a $42 million revenue stream, certainly we have to make it up some other way. But I simply agree that retaxing people's hard-earned income upon their death is just not the right way to tax.
Madam Chair, I had one thought that I spoke with Don Schellenberg a little bit about, and he said, they're looking for money, don't say it. But one thing that I question on this revenue neutral, especially when it comes to the family farm, invariably to pay that tax, a mortgage taken out, traditionally 30 years. One thing that you still allow is the deduction for interest paid on mortgages. Over that 30-year period, what is the final impact of the taxation when you take into account those deductions for 30 years on interest paid versus getting your money up front? What is the difference? I don't know. I don't know how to even figure it.
Mm-hmm. Any comments on that?
That's an interesting point. We've looked at doing that, and what I hear you saying is you would want to cap mortgage interest deductions, possibly an exchange, or is that what you're saying?
No. What I am saying is you're looking to be revenue neutral. How close do we come to revenue neutral looking at that entire 30-year time frame from the deduction? If I take a $50,000 deduction on my state tax bill and don't pay 9% on it, that's a significant amount of money each year that the state of Oregon is not collecting.
Yeah. No, I get the point. If I could follow up, I don't think there's anybody up here that doesn't have sympathy for the plight of farmers who do have to break off land or sell there. This committee often gets people coming in and talking about how one particular tax is unfair or burdensome in many ways, and usually they're right. But what we don't get a lot of before this committee is suggestions on how to improve our revenue system so that we can keep quality education, keep quality of life in a way that makes you want to be here in the first place. And so I was just wondering if, not just in the spirit of being revenue neutral, what ways you think this state should move up to raise revenue, perhaps to offset this, but to fund the schools that your kids go to or went to, and fund the very things that provide the quality of life that makes you want to settle here in Oregon in the first place.
I just elbowed Don and told him, I think maybe hopefully I've got an answer for you.
Okay.
We at the Farm Bureau do have this tax committee that Don referred to, and it is going to meet here next week with regard to many of the legislative issues. And I think it would be a prime thing to bring up and discuss and in some way perhaps bring back to you our answer.
Representative Barnhart.
Madam Chair, thank you. That would be a fine idea because, of course, as Representative Hess points out, we are often asked to reduce taxes when in a situation where we are, in fact, pretty broke, and figuring out where we can actually raise the revenue to pay for basic services is a very, very important thing. And I know nobody wants us not to pay for those things. In fact, they have to be paid for. Of course, and I also appreciate the point that that you made about interest on farmland mortgages. Of course, farmland mortgage interest is deductible as a business expense, and that's a very important question. I think it's one worth looking into, and I appreciate you raising the point.
All right.
Thank you very much for coming. I appreciate your testimony, and I appreciate the information that you offered in the tax burden that should be paid or would be paid should these laws stay in effect. I think that you're right on target, that we sympathize with the farmers, but as an economic stimulus to the state of Oregon, the estimated revenue impact on this being less than 0.5% if you take just the general fund and substantially less than that if you take all of it. Some of my colleagues may not agree with me, but the revenue impact is not as severe as we might try to make it to believe. So I appreciate that you did come forward and make the testimony and the tie to the rest of the folks that may have the burden and not asking the farmers just to be singled out. I appreciate that. And, of course, the other businesses that are affected in the same fashion have the same remedies that you're offering, the mortgages and all of the things that go along with it. So I appreciate very much your tying it to everyone. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for being here today. Well, good discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. All right. Next, I'll call J.L. Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm J.L. Wilson, representing NFIB. I've got 12,000 Oregon employers in my organization. I took up a lot of your time on Thursday speaking about the merits of death tax elimination, so I guess I'll focus my comments on the merits of the three bills that are in front of you today. They present an interesting and complicated, I might add, mosaic, because they all have their upsides and their downsides. I want to be very clear that we support all three in concept, and I'll just briefly touch on each one and then subject myself to questions. House Bill 2184, in terms of getting rid of the problem of taxing estates that were at a lower exemption level at the state than they were at the federal, is obviously problematic. I've had issues of members being taxed down to an exclusion of $600,000 at the state level when their exclusion at the federal level was actually higher. And their question is, you know, what's going on? So I think at a very minimum, 2184 is a policy you ought to consider. My caveat there is it's obviously problematic for deaths occurring in 2003 and after to go back to the $600,000 exclusion level. At the very minimum, I would suggest a connection to the Taxpayer Relief Act of 97, in which that exclusion goes up to $700,000 and up to $1 million, ultimately in 2006. 2503, Representative Miller's bill, when you're talking just about a clean cut elimination, I would suffice it to say that would probably be the preference of my membership overall. The problem with that, though, is it doesn't incorporate those things that are included in House Bill 2184, which is how do you deal with those estates in which there were the person of the estate died between 98 and 2002, and you have the disparities in the exclusion amounts. And so some melded form of 2503 and 2184 would probably be appropriate. As a whole, the package contained in House Bill 2704 is probably, the entire substance of the bill itself is probably the best of the three in terms of capturing the benefits of both, but it phases in death tax elimination over a longer period of time and eases revenue impacts on the state and draws that out. So, you know, it's the preference of the committee in which way you decide to go. I would just ask that you might consider those changes to each of the respective bills that you consider. It's the policy that's important to us, how you get there. I'm mindful of the revenue impacts, and I don't pretend to be able to do it all at once, but it's the policy and how you get from point A to point B that matters most to us. One final point that I'd bring up: compliance between or conformity between federal and state is of utmost importance to us, and that is because you hear a lot about regulatory burden. And you hear, but people don't have, specific examples of where regulations are hurting business. I will tell you that the vast majority of regulation that hurts business is contained in tax compliance. And to the extent that you have two codes that are separate, and you have to juggle both of them and keep separate sets of books or separate sets of numbers and do your accounting in two different ways, that is a huge chunk of what business owners would consider to be regulatory headache. And so I would keep that in mind as the premise that conformity between the two, as close as you can achieve it, is the best option to go. So those are my comments, and I'm supportive of those three bills with the conditions you heard, and I'll be glad to answer questions.
Thank you, JL. Questions for JL? Any questions? All right. Thank you very much. Patrick Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Patrick. For the record, my name is Patrick Green. I'm with the Oregon AFL-CIO and representing the Revenue Coalition. We are opposed to the bills in question, particularly House Bill 2503, because they cost too much. And we can't afford them. Maybe some other time, but we can't afford them now. I'm sympathetic to the plight of family farmers. I grew up in Illinois in the breadbasket. There was a soybean farm across the street. My friends, not I, but my friends used to go cow tipping. And so I know, so the family farmer. So I'm sympathetic to the family farms, and I think that Representative Barnhart brought up an idea that we should consider. What is a family farm? What's the income threshold? What's the value threshold of a family farm? So I should say I am sympathetic, but in terms of the cost, the 0305 biennium cost is $42.1 million general fund, which is maybe 0.1%, but it's also $1 million buys a day of school for 51,000 kids. So this would be 42 days of school, about 2 months of school for 51,000 kids. That's a lot of money for that. 3,234 seniors could get in-home care for a year with the cost of this bill. And I'd ask what the proponents would propose repealing to trade this. If this is an onerous tax, what's a less onerous tax? If this is the worst tax we could possibly levy, what's another tax that is not quite as onerous that we ought to repeal? Folks on Friday talked about the limited liability corporation as a way to help deal with this. No one really addressed this. And the other thing that I'd say is that many of these businesses received tax breaks and will receive tax breaks in the next year. Agricultural, about $311 million in 0305. Timber, $613 million. In 0305, those were two of the industries that were mentioned today. So we can also think of the inheritance tax as a return on an investment, a return on an investment in tax breaks and stimulus that we've given over the life of a business. And eventually, those who make an investment need some sort of return. And what do we do with that return? We don't hoard it. We don't put it into a bank. We churn it back out into public services like education and more business investment and job creation at the local level and senior services and those sorts of things. So I think that all these things need to be considered. The cost, we can't afford it. It's a return on an investment, and we already have a number of tax breaks that the industries who came forward asking for the repeal already get. So with that, I'll conclude my testimony. Thanks for your time, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
All right, thank you. Any questions for Patrick? All right, another perspective. Thank you. That's what we're all about. All right, what about Cliff Carnegie? Deborah, after this testimony, I'd like you to come up and kind of wrap it for us. That's good.
I am Cliff Carnegie, a recently retired farmer from Albany, Oregon, in Benton County. I really didn't come up this morning to speak. I come up to listen. I thought there'd be another hearing next week, maybe, and I would do that, and I found out since I'm here that you had one last week. I'm sorry I missed that. I'll try to make some comments on my charts that are being handed out, but I do not do well speaking at ad libbing. I usually write out my testimony, so if you'll bear with me. I better preface my remarks to say that I disagree with most everything that was said here this morning. The upper chart is three hypothetical tax scenarios for the next generation farmer in a one-child family. And this contains some assumptions. And the lower chart is if a farm was being handed down in a five-child family. You know, when it comes to inheritance, the more children you have, the more complicated it is. And also, you're a little more lucky if you're an only child. Well, anyway, I used a hypothetical farm being handed down worth $5 million. And the upper chart, clear on the left, that left column there, this $5 million farm. And in the second column, that represents the inheritance tax, estate tax, that would be on that. It's $1.25 million. Now, when I started out farming, I farmed for 40 years. And the hardest thing that I had to buck was the availability of land. And while I was banging my head against the wall to find land to farm, I would hear people complaining about the inheritance tax. Well, I've always said for 40 years that if I could inherit a farm, I'd be happy to pay the tax on it. Now, that's quite simple if it's a one-child family. Now, if I inherited that $5 million farm and I needed $1.25 million to pay the estate tax to get control of that farm, I would feel like I was one of the luckiest kids in the valley. Because with my experience with banks, I would have no problem. My banker would be happy to loan me $1.25 million on a $5 million farm. Okay, over there in the third column, that's what it would cost the child in a one-child family to take over that land. If you... That's the estate tax he'd pay. Now, if you would repeal the estate tax, that would be a benefit to him. He wouldn't have to cough up or borrow $1.25 million. Now, let's drop that. Now, if you drop down, on that scenario number one, the $1.25 million.
Mr. Carnegie, just one moment. Representative Scott would like to ask you a question.
Okay.
Sorry, I lost you on the going over to scenario number three. Try that one again, please.
I didn't get over to scenario number three, and actually I was, it gets a little more complicated, and I was going to bypass that now. I'd be happy to get my supporting material to you. I should have said that I do not deny that somebody getting started in farming, it is difficult. But the problem that I see is not the inheritance tax. The problem is the overpricing of land. Land is priced at more than you can justify paying for it if you're just going to farm it. Is that helpful?
No, but okay.
All right.
On that, from that scenario number one, the third column there, if you drop down, that's what in a five-child family, that's what it would cost. It'd cost the child is taking over the farm from his four siblings, it'd cost him $4.25 million. Whereas if he's only one child in the family, it's $1.25 million. Now, down there in that lower one, where the second scenario, where the tax is repealed, with the tax repealed there, the fifth child taking over that farm still has to come up with $4 million to take over the operation. Does that make sense? The burden, the big part of the burden of getting started farming or taking over a farm is the value of the land, not the inheritance tax that's involved. Anyway, maybe I should stop there, and if you have another hearing, I might come back with my supporting.
You're always welcome to come back, Mr. Carnegie.
Thank you.
Happy to have you today. All right, Deborah, we'll have you come up quickly, if you will, and we'll have
her. Well, I should say that I'm in good company when I am supporting the inheritance tax, because Bill Gates' father, he's part of a new organization that is promoting the retaining of the estate tax. And Bill Gates, I understand, is one of the wealthiest men in the
country. We've heard that.
He has a few dollars.
Thank you. I was in no way overlooking you, Deborah. You were not on my list, but I think it is good to have you come in at the end.
Thank you,
and then
Chair.
Have questions.
I'm more than happy to show up any time you'd like. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. And as you've probably figured out, there are really two issues facing you. One is what you do in the future. One is taking care of the past. And our focus really is on what happened in the past and attempting to reconcile that. And some of what I'm going to say, I said Friday, but I thought it was important to get it on the record for this bill as well. In the legislature first added a reference to federal taxes to Oregon law in 1971. And over the years, a number of references to federal law have been added to Chapter 118. And I went through that this morning. There are 14 pages in Chapter 118, double-sided paper, and there are six different statutes that contain references to either federal law or the Internal Revenue Code. And to my knowledge, there has never been a specific date included in Chapter 118, which is why we have the problem that we have now. Legislative Council has advised that if you don't have a specific date reference, then when Oregon law references federal law, the date of connection is the date that statute was either enacted or last amended. So when you go through Chapter 118 and you look at those references, it's possible you could go look at four different versions of federal law to try to figure out what the Oregon inheritance tax is, because there has never been a specific date reference. The statutes that were meant to work together as a whole do not, because you have these different references to federal law. When we realized that there was a problem after the 2001 session, we looked at legislative history. In particular, we looked at what this legislature did in the 99 session. This committee reviewed the changes that were made in the Taxpayer Relief Act of 1997. There was written testimony presented to the committee about the changes in the exclusion amount. The same information was presented to the Senate Revenue Committee. And in fact, you did adopt a law in 1999 that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever unless you adopted the Taxpayer Relief Act changes of 97. And that law required that taxpayers recapture a tax benefit, and if you don't pick up the 97 changes, they never received the benefit in the first place. So you're increasing their tax by a benefit they never received. They don't work together. So in looking at that, we felt it was important to come back to you and ask you what you would like us to do with the 98 through 2001 years before we tried to collect tax that perhaps you didn't intend to have collected. And House Bill 2184, I've provided you with a little summary of what it does, or at least my understanding of what it does. And if I can find my copy of it. House Bill 2184 conforms the law to what was practice for years 98 through 2001. So those returns, if this is enacted, would be correctly filed, 98 through 2001. For 2002, we continue the assumption that you wanted to pick up the Taxpayer Relief Act of 97. This is different than what is currently being done now for returns that are being filed. For 2002, we are trying to interpret the current law as best we can, apply current law, and estates are filing using an exclusion amount of $600,000. So we are not tied to TRA 97 for 2002 returns. House Bill 2184 would tie us to those changes for 2002. So that means if someone has actually filed an estate tax return for Oregon for 2002, they would be able to amend and reflect the $700,000 exclusion amount. For deaths in 2003 and later, we reflect pre-TRA 97 law. That is, we are not making any presumption about what you want to do for 2003 or later. We're going back to current law. And I can't emphasize enough that that is a problem. We will be back in the same position that we're in now, beginning in 2003, absent some other legislation. So 2184 does not solve that problem for us. If you want to stay at the $600,000 exclusion amount, that's fine, but there need to be other changes in the Oregon law to conform all of these statutes and make them work together. 2184 will not do that. And as already pointed out, we have a 1985 law change that didn't quite do what we think the sponsors intended, so there's a correction there to allow assessment, to put a statute of limitations on assessing additional taxes, which conforms to what we currently have for individuals. And I believe that's the end of my testimony, Madam Chair. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
So, Deborah, Elizabeth talked about additional language in 2184. Is that what you're referring to as well?
Madam Chair, yes. There could be additional language in 2184. There could be another bill used as a vehicle to address 2003 and later. It's simply that we did not want to guess as to what you wanted to do in the future. So 2003 is going back to current law. And again, current law does not fit well. It needs to be fixed in some way or other.
Okay. Questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Berger.
I believe it was Mr. Chain mentioned that there's really two issues, and somebody suggested that maybe two bills are necessary. One would be remedial, clean up the current mess, and another, a separate bill to go forward. And I guess I'd like you to connect this to what I think you just said, if I understand, about 2184, which is that it has all three pieces in it, but the last piece just says back to the future. In other words, we'd go back to the 1996 from here on. That 2184 attempts to clean up the mess, and then as far as the remedial piece, and then for the future, it says we're going to go back to where we were in 1996. Is that kind of what?
Madam Chair, Representative Berger, that's pretty much it. 2184 cleans up the mess, and then it restores the mess for 2003 and later. Mm-hmm. So the mess needs to be fixed for 2003 and later. 2184 doesn't do it.
Doesn't, basically. It's okay. It is. Madam Chair, can I follow up just a minute for clarification?
Oh, sure.
So what the Department of Revenue is trying to do with 2184 is clean up the mess.
Madam Chair, Representative Berger, yes.
That's your best shot at cleaning up the current mess, and then just sort of stops there in terms of any proactive plan for going forward.
Madam Chair, Representative Berger, 2184 does what we thought the 99 legislature intended to do and actually had done as far as picking up the changes made by the Taxpayer Relief Act of 1997, and it applies those changes through 2002.
Okay.
And beyond that, we leave it to you, your judgment as to what you would like to have the inheritance tax look like for Oregon.
Okay. Thank you.
I can begin to get it. Other questions? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How many estates are we talking about in that period of time, round numbers?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, there are fewer than 1,000 returns filed each year, I believe. Okay. And what we're talking about as far as those impacted is just a small window of returns within a certain value. If the estate is large enough that the federal tax liability would absorb all of the credit, even though there's a mess, it doesn't impact them. Nothing would change in their Oregon liability. So it's just a small number of returns. And for the life of me, I can't remember the number right now, but I think it's less than a couple of hundred over those 4 years that would actually have a potential increase in the Oregon tax.
Thank you.
Other questions? Well, I appreciate very much the chair telling us that he would prefer we not pass anything out today. I would hardly think that we were in a position, but if there is... Thank you, Deborah, very much. And if there is no other business to come before this body, I'll call the meeting adjourned.